It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
Start on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
His house, the three and the lead, you betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner,
P.J. Tucker.
Gordon by Gordon.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Go to builtbar.com and use promo code Locked On, and you'll get $10 off your first order. Now, as always, I am your host, Jackson Gatlin. You can catch me on Twitter at JT Gatlin. And of course, you can also find our show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. And by now, you guys should know the drill. If you appreciate what we do here, do me a favor, hit that subscribe button, maybe drop us a review, leave us some stars. And above all else, please share the podcast on all your social media platforms. I would sincerely appreciate it. Today's episode, we will continue our conversation with Sports Illustrated's Michael Shapiro as we continue breaking down the Western Conference elite and how they would look in a potential playoff matchup with your Houston Rockets. So, this next team, another team that's fun to discuss for a variety of different reasons, a longstanding feud, all sorts of a lot of bickering back and forth between the two fan bases over the years. And, you know, obviously the trade that was consummated last summer, sending Chris Paul to Oklahoma City and bringing Russell Westbrook to Houston, the Oklahoma City Thunder. What immediately jumps to mind thinking about this potential matchup?
I think if you're kind of looking at these teams here in the West in the first round and the potential opponents for the Rockets, I think that the Thunder are probably the one that you would say is preferable if you're a Rockets fan. Although I wouldn't be so quick to dismiss the idea that perhaps the series could go to six games. I think that Oklahoma City really has a chip on its shoulder as a roster as a whole. I think that's probably due to Chris Paul. And they, stealing a game at the Toyota Center, I think would really just make his season for Chris. I've been so impressed with the job he's done. I've also been pretty impressed with the job that Billy Donovan's done. He's kind of taken a lot of hits over the years, and I think a lot of it is rightfully so. But the way he's been able to develop a lot of these young players and make them strong, NBA assets, I think it's very impressive. So it's been a good story for Oklahoma City, but I don't think that the Thunder are a team the Rockets would necessarily fear by any stretch of the imagination in the postseason.
You know, and I think the dynamic too that they've kind of developed, and this is something that we've spoken about, a handful of times here, and for good reason, because the Rockets and Thunder are two organizations that are very closely tied for a ton of different reasons. The most recent of which, obviously, the CP3 Westbrook trade. But I really think that this was the best possible scenario for both Russell Westbrook and Chris Paul, because if you were to flip the two right now, I can't envision either one of them being more successful than they are in their current positions, because Chris Paul is finally, in a system and on a team where he doesn't have to do half the heavy lifting every night during the regular season. He can just kind of, coast in the clutch and take over down the line when he needs to and let the rest of the team do the heavy lifting for the first, say, 42 minutes of the game. And then likewise, Russell Westbrook, this dominant offensive, tornado, this engine, of constant energy, now is the true focal point of a team that is optimizing his strengths and his ability to, get to the rim at will and facilitate for his teammates, and has, shooters placed around him now to take advantage of his abilities.
Yeah, I think it's worked out well for both parties. And I think a lot of people were skeptical of what was going to happen with Chris Paul when he went to Oklahoma City. The trade machine seemed to be starting back up before he even touched down there in OKC. But he's been terrific. And really, since the start of the year, he's batted down trade rumors and said, this is where I want to be. And it's shown. He's looked rejuvenated in spurts. That kind of three-guard lineup that they have with Gilgeous Alexander, Paul, and Schroeder has really been menacing this year. I looked up the stat the other day. That trio was outscoring teams by 26.2 points per 100 possessions, which is a pretty obscene mark. So it's nice that Paul's found a home. He seems to be a nice mentor for Gilgeous Alexander. Again, but I think it's more of a nice story than a real contender situation, unfortunately, for OKC.
And we get back to the whole, you know, the whole small ball issue, you know, thinking about a series between the Rockets and Thunder and imagining PJ Tucker and the just beating that he would get having to deal with, you know, I don't think anybody is capable of truly manhandling PJ Tucker, you know, so I can't get away with saying that. But if there was a guy in the NBA who might be able to manhandle PJ Tucker, I think it might be Steven Adams, you know, arguably one of, if not the strongest guy in the league.
Yeah, certainly. No, I'll tell you, you know, you go in NBA locker rooms each night, you see a bunch of different players. I don't often anymore really get struck by the size of these individuals. Steven Adams is one of those guys that it is really striking. You see him walk around and, you know, you look your head up and he's, you know, he's three times as wide as I am. And it seems like he's twice as tall sometimes. He's a real mountain of a man. And he could, you know, wreak havoc on the boards, of course, against the Rockets. But ultimately, I think that's kind of an ancillary issue. I think that the Rockets in a lot of series kind of understand that they're going to lose the boards battle. But it's just kind of a sacrifice you have to make with the way that they play.
This is something that, you know, has been brought up occasionally since, or that I've brought up occasionally since they've fully committed to small ball. But do you know, where do you stand on the idea that it's okay to lose the battle on the boards? You know, it's okay to sacrifice that part of your game as long as you are excelling in all the other parts. I mean, my thing with it is there's just such a slim margin for error. And then you already have a team that is, you know, not one of the better defensive teams in the league. So when you give opposing teams, you know, two, three, four different cracks at it offensively to, you know, hit a bucket, it becomes a little difficult. And imagining that in a 7-game series is where I have some concerns for this team moving forward.
Yeah, I think that's certainly a fair point. In my opinion, the move to jettison Capella and bring in Covington overall and maximizing the Rockets' title chances, I think it was the right move. But it is an astute point that especially in the playoffs, sacrificing rebounds and losing those possessions, especially when the game slows down, that's really critical. You know, in the last 6-8 minutes of a playoff game, teams are going to bleed the clock to 20, 24 on every single possession that they can. And if you're giving up, you know, one or two boards, that can really be critical. I think it's a gang rebounding, kind of a team effort sort of thing. Now, Russell Westbrook will help with that, certainly. I think that's one of the big upgrades they honestly made in dealing Chris Paul for Westbrook for Chris Paul, is that real rebounding edge that he gives you. But yeah, I think that's one of the chief concerns for Houston going into a playoff series.
And so how do you envision a series, you know, between the Rockets and Thunder going? Do you think the Thunder just, you know, have a chance to steal one game, or do you think they might push it to six?
Yeah, it's kind of they might push it to six. I think they'll certainly steal a game. I think Paul's pride, and more than that, even the Oklahoma City crowd is pretty crazy, you know, just to be able to still have playoff basketball there after we thought the franchise was being kind of completely torn down will be nuts. My pick would be Rockets in five. Wouldn't be shocked by a sweep. I mean, I guess I'd be mildly surprised if it went six, but again, I think I have so much respect for Chris Paul. You know, if he went and found a way to steal two games, I wouldn't be completely shocked.
You know, and that's the interesting thing is if the playoffs do resume, do teams have home court advantage? Does home court advantage matter if there's no fans in the stadiums? You know, that's something that's definitely worth taking into account, because you have certain arenas, certain, you know, stadiums that have an inherent home court advantage. You know, what jumps to mind is the Jazz with Salt Lake City. You know, you mentioned it just now talking about the Oklahoma City Thunder, their crazy ravenous fans there. We'll call it the South Beach curse. You know, even though it's not something the Rockets have to deal with, you know, it's something that definitely Eastern Conference teams deal with. And, you know, it'd be so unique to see a playoff game with no fans in it.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I have to be honest with you, Jackson. I completely forgot about this whole kind of quarantine situation. And even if it isn't a quarantine, I don't think that there's any chance we're going to have fans in the stands if we complete this season. So that's true that hardcore home court advantages will be eliminated pretty much guaranteed. Take a little pot shot here. I don't think that's a big deal for the Toyota Center crowd necessarily, but for teams like
I feel like a lot of Rockets fans are very self-aware, so
yeah, for sure definitely. But yeah, for the Thunder, they don't have that advantage, but you know, the Rockets, no harm, no foul, I guess.
You know, and I think there's one thing too to think about though in a potential hypothetical playoff scenario. if teams were allowed to play in their own home stadiums, I do think there is still some home court advantage, right? It's not the home court advantage we tend to think of, which is playing in front of your fans, your crowd, all that stuff. But there is a home court advantage to playing in the stadium that you play the majority of your season in, being, you know, being present with your facilities, the locker rooms that you are accustomed to, sleeping in your own bed, that kind of thing, as opposed to living in a hotel room, being away from your family, you know, things like that. I think there are still some inherent advantages to playing, you know, to having home court advantage and playing in your own stadium, even if it's not in front of your own fans.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that circumstance might really dictate this playoffs more than ever. What teams are going to be, especially if we're in a quarantine situation, right? What teams are going to be ready? Which superstars are going to be able to adjust? Who's going to handle, you know, if you're quarantined away from your family for 4 weeks, 5 weeks, how's that going to be for you? It's such an unprecedented situation that kind of analyzing how that would play out is kind of a moot point, but it's certainly something to consider as we move forward and as the NBA kind of manages these contingencies for how they're going to bring the season back.
Yeah, and quick shout out to Austin Rivers, who had a great interview with Craig Ackerman, Rockets broadcaster, in one of those wireside chats. And I mentioned this previously, but you know, he kind of highlighted the fact that in an environment where there aren't fans in the stadium, he thinks that there might be some guys, you know, kind of end of rotation guys or end of bench guys who suddenly they have this mental pressure relieved and they're able to just, you know, ball out as opposed to, you know, playing in front of thousands of fans. It's like a mental barrier that's just suddenly not there anymore, you know, and he mentioned that there's guys who, you know, they can really hoop in practice, but then they get in front of the fans and it's just a completely different atmosphere. So I think, you know, obviously it's an unprecedented situation, but that would be so cool to, like, could you imagine suddenly guys, like, you know, they're playing in front of no fans and suddenly like everybody's shooting percentages just jump up like 10% or something crazy because there's no fan noise, there's no distractions, and these guys are just able to just really focus? Like, that'd be crazy.
It's very interesting. Yeah, which guys would rise? I imagine there would be some players that would actually be hindered by it. You know, they don't have the kind of fans fueling them. You know, perhaps a guy like Russell Westbrook, who
that's a really good point. Oh man,
feeds off the fans. You know, you never know. Obviously, it's pretty dumb to speculate, right, as to who. But it is a very interesting thing. I think that whatever these playoffs turn out to be, and I think we will have a playoffs, it's going to be like something we've never seen before, and I think it'll be pretty fascinating.
All right. Now coming up, we've got another team that Rockets fans love to hate on just a little bit. The team, you know, up there in South Oklahoma, the I-45 rivalry, so to speak. So we'll get there in just one moment. But first, I have a quick message from our friends over at Built Bars. Now, for me, protein bars, it was always a chore, right, to eat a protein bar. You know, I got to hit my protein goals for today. I'm going to the gym later. I got to have my protein bar now to get my gains later. And it was always a chore. It's not like that with Built Bars. Built Bars are actually delicious to eat. They basically taste like a candy bar. They have 16 amazing flavors. They're all coated in chocolate, 100% covered in chocolate. What other protein bar does that? And here's the thing, right? They're soft and easy to chew. Like it's not a slog to, you know, eat one of these protein bars. You know, other protein bars, they're gritty or powdery or grimy, whatever. Not these ones. These ones are flavorful, easy to chew. So whether you're, you know, not in shape, trying to, you know, get in shape, or you're in shape, you're trying to maintain that shape, whatever it is, you can get there. You can achieve whatever goal you're trying to set for yourself with Built Bar. So just go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you get $10 off your first order. So remember, use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at builtbar.com. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. So, Michael, we've got now another favorite team that Houstonians love to hate, the Dallas Mavericks. The Mavericks with Luka Doncic. Doncic, is it Doncic or Doncic?
I go Doncic. I think that's what most people go with, but I'd be lying if I said I knew exactly.
Okay, that's fair. I'm going to go with Doncic too, but I remember like very early on when I took over the podcast, I remember somebody reached out to me explaining like the proper pronunciation for his last name, and I can't ever remember the conversation properly, so I can't ever remember if it's Doncic or Doncic, but we're going to go Doncic. So, sure. Or better yet, we'll just call him Luka. Let's do that. It's one of those, you know, his first name's just easier, and it's highly recognizable because there's nobody else named Luka in the league. So a guy who is basically Harden Jr., right? A guy who, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, what do I want to call it? Rabble-rousing, whatever, of, you know, who he's modeled his game after, you know, people saying, oh, he, you know, he's LeBron light. He's not Harden light. But then you watch the guy play and he's basically James Harden, you know, just a slightly taller, maybe a little bit slower version of James Harden.
Yeah. I mean, you watch them, not just with the step back, but the way in which they contort their bodies, the way they kind of throw their chest into defenders, the way they kind of see the floor and act as kind of the king chess piece there. It's very similar. I think Doncic is truly terrific. He absolutely torched the Rockets early in the season in Houston. I think that, you know, I said that Oklahoma City is a team that won't give the Rockets much trouble. I said that Utah is a team I don't really see giving the Rockets much trouble. Be careful about Dallas. I think that the Mavericks with Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis, that kind of duo is something that really could threaten the Rockets. You know, I think Houston would certainly be favored in the series, but don't be surprised if this went six or potentially seven in a potential playoff matchup.
Yeah, this is one where you talk about a shootout. You know, the Mavericks are – wait, hang on. I had stats pulled up earlier. Where is this? Hang on. We gotta figure this out. Where's their offensive rating at? They're the one team ahead of the Rockets in offensive rating this season, you know, sitting at a very toasty 115.8 with the Rockets just behind at 113.4. I mean, you want to talk about a team that can light it up just as much, if not more, than the Rockets, it's the Dallas Mavericks. And so much so that, you know, I think they really could have their fair shake at really any of the other teams in the West. You know, thinking about that potential 2-7 matchup of the Clippers and Mavericks, you know, that's a game, that's a series of games that I would absolutely be tuned into every single one, just seeing how they play, you know, how they played out.
Yeah, I think that Doncic in his first playoff series is kind of must-watch TV. I kind of want to talk about Kristaps Porzingis for a second here. He hasn't had the strongest season that he's had in his career. His shooting percentage is a little down. He is a truly terrifying matchup problem, especially for the Rockets. You know, I think that in these series, in these matchups, you see even the Rockets put Covington and P.J. Tucker on Porzingis, and you think that, you know, they're stronger than KP and they can kind of bully him. It doesn't matter. You know, the dude's 7'3". He just turns and rises up over and over again over the Rockets defenders. He's the kind of guy that can have, you know, a 30 and 15 kind of game. And you've seen in these matchups, Houston has no answer for the big fella. If he could kind of reach his peak form, you know, reach his all-star form like he kind of was in his final season in New York, I think it's a problem for the Rockets. Now, Dallas doesn't exactly have the depth, I think, to kind of hang with the Rockets. I think there's kind of a tail off after that top two unless Tim Hardaway gets really hot. But those, the Doncic Porzingis duo is going to be a real problem for years to come.
Yeah, and you know, that was one of the reasons that I kind of threw him in there, you know, talking about Jokic, at least offensively, you know, being a complete mismatch and a real problem for the Rockets. And I want to highlight, we go back to the last matchup between the Rockets and Mavericks, in which Luka Doncic didn't even play, and the Rockets really just kind of survived the Mavericks, you know, by a score of 128 to 121. And, you know, Kristaps Porzingis in that game had 35 and 12. And this was, you know, the game where the Rockets got absolutely decimated on the boards. You know, it was 52 to, what was it, 37. Now, this wasn't during the official small ball era. However, Clint Capella did not play this game. And so it was small ball in the sense that they didn't have a big in there. And so that was kind of the preview. And I remember watching this game thinking, why on God's green earth is Isaiah Hartenstein not getting at least a few minutes in this matchup where you don't have a legitimate center against a 7'3" guy who's absorbing every rebound out there?
Yeah, he seemed to honestly, it was like he was playing volleyball with himself at times. He was tipping it off the glass to himself, you know, rising with his big, you know, paw above the head of every Rocket. Porzingis, I think that, I don't want to say he's underrated necessarily. I think everyone kind of recognizes skill or talent, but I think with the ugly ending in New York, his injury, of course, and then the kind of shaky start to this year, people are forgetting how much of a force this guy is, the kind of player that everyone thought he could be in his first few years. You know, he's still only, what is he, 24? Over this next decade, I'd be pretty surprised if Dallas wasn't contending for the Western Conference crown as long as Porzingis stays healthy.
Absolutely. You know, and I think to kind of build on a couple of the points that you made about why people are forgetting about KP is he's playing now in the shadow of Luka Doncic, right? Is, you know, he may never be the face of the Dallas franchise now that Luka's there, because of Luka being as good as he is so quickly. But, you know, he will definitely be an excellent Robin to Luka's Batman over the next decade or so. And, you know, when I'm thinking about this matchup, this is a team that thankfully I don't think the Rockets would find themselves matched up with, because I think that it's going to be too much of a grind for Dallas to, you know, dig their way up in this, or, you know, fight their way up in the seedings. And I don't really expect the Rockets to come out and somehow, you know, go 5-0 or 10-0 in whatever, you know, potential regular season games we get whenever the season returns to face a 6 or 7 seeded Dallas Mavericks. So thankfully, and here's the thing, if the Mavericks were to upset, say, the Clippers, and then the Rockets were to meet the Mavericks in, say, a second round matchup, that I would be content with. But thinking about, you know, any situation in which the Rockets would have to play the Mavericks in the first round does not make me happy whatsoever.
Yeah, it'd be kind of scary, I think, for the Rockets, especially in that they're the favorite team, right? You know, it's kind of, you don't want to lose to your little brother situation. I think right now, at least over the past, past half decade, it's kind of been that way where the Rockets or the Mavericks are kind of the Rockets' little brother. Perhaps that'll flip in the 2020s. I would say for the Rockets, you know, we kind of have spent this portion of the chat worrying about how Houston would face against Dallas. I don't think that Dallas has the defensive personnel to really stop both Harden and Westbrook. I think we would see a lot of shootouts. I think that Porzingis would probably eat a fair amount. Still, you would have to assume the Rockets are favored and they would ultimately take care of business, albeit in a longer series than we would originally assume.
Yeah, and I think this is one of those where the Rockets would absolutely have to beat themselves. Now, whether that comes in the form of role players not hitting shots or Westbrook and Harden settling for, you know, mid-range jumpers, or for the latter, you know, settling for the step-back three instead of being aggressive and driving to the hole, whatever form it may take, it would definitely have to come on the heels of the Rockets not necessarily living up to their potential and the Mavericks, you know, taking advantage of that.
Yeah, it would certainly be a significant disappointment to Dallas. I would say maybe you disagree with this. The Rockets are the 6th seed right now in the West, right? I think that losing in the playoffs to any team other than the Lakers or the Clippers would be a disappointment. I think if you fall to one of the 2 LA teams, okay, that's fair. They have these 2 superstars. They're, you know, fantastic teams and title contenders. But I think if the Rockets were to lose to Denver, Utah, Oklahoma City, or Dallas, you know, in the playoffs, especially in the first round, the season would be viewed as a very, very major disappointment.
Oh, no, I absolutely agree with that. And I'll actually even take it a step further. I genuinely believe that for the Rockets, you know, for the weight that is placed on the franchise, I already think the season is, you know, and here's the thing, and you kind of mentioned this earlier, you know, talking about, you know, not being cavalier about it, but the fact that had COVID not, you know, hit maybe a week or two earlier and the Rockets were one of the higher seeded teams, we might be talking about this team differently. We might view them differently than we do right now. But fact of the matter is they're sitting at 6th in the Western Conference. They're a team that has been, you know, at the top of the conference in previous years, and they had a, you know, really strong outing against the Golden State Warriors, were a hamstring away from a finals appearance. Then they came back and kind of had a down year, lost to the Warriors in the second round instead of the conference finals this time around, and lost in a really kind of disappointing Game 6. I think that the expectation is at least at a minimum Western Conference Finals. You know, I genuinely think it has to be a competitive Western Conference Finals. I think that's the expectations that, like, the ownership group has, and that, you know, Daryl Morey has, and, you know, Rockets fans have, because of where this team is at. Anything less of that, even if it were, you know, losing to one of the LA teams in an early round, say, you know, first round or second round, I still think that would be viewed as a disappointing season.
Yeah, it's tough because I do think that it would be viewed as a disappointment, though I will say that if you lose to one of the Los Angeles teams, you know, as long as you're competitive, it's tough. For fans, perhaps it's different, but I think for the players and D'Antoni and Morey, I think it would be tough to be kind of furious or very upset after losing to the Clippers or the Lakers. I think those teams have established themselves as kind of head and shoulders above the West. But you are right in that, not that the clock is ticking necessarily, But I think the road is only going to get harder for Houston in future years. Neither of the LA teams are going anywhere, barring some weird kind of free agency snafu. Dallas is only going to get better. Denver is kind of going to stay steady. So there is kind of a cream of the crop in the Western Conference that seems like it'll be here for years to come. It's going to be tough for the Rockets to break through, for sure.
Well, now, I guess it's kind of another, you know, we'll have another one of these peek behind the curtains kind of for you guys. And, you know, I've done these before where I kind of explain what goes on behind the scenes with the podcast. So if you'll remember in part one of this sit-down chat with Michael, I suggested that we do the Lakers last, and then we actually start with the Clippers, since the Lakers are kind of the top of the Western Conference, and I kind of wanted to save the best for last. And that apparently was a mistake, because as I was chatting with Michael, it slipped my mind. And we went through the Clippers, Nuggets, Jazz, Thunder, Mavericks, and then we dove into a final topic that we will get to in just one moment, a bit of rumors circulating regarding the Rockets' head coaching position. But we completely skipped out on the Lakers. And for that, I apologize. So I will leave you with this. I do think that the Rockets are quite uniquely equipped to be able to handle the Lakers on like an individual matchup basis. Because think about it. You can put P.J. Tucker on LeBron James, Robert Covington on Anthony Davis. James Harden is well-equipped to deal with either of the opposing bigs in JaVale McGee or Dwight Howard. Thinking about the way the Lakers play the game with their offense being funneled through one of LeBron James or Anthony Davis roughly at all times, it's largely similar to how the Rockets funnel their offense through James Harden and Russell Westbrook at all times. So that being said, you know, these two teams are kind of, in a way, they're almost mirror images of each other with the idea of give the ball to your superstar, get out of the way, let them create for themselves or create a shot for a teammate, and they just do it in slightly different ways. Now, I do regret that we didn't get a chance to see these two teams play one more time, because I don't think you can just point to the February 6th matchup, the official start of small ball Robert Covington's debut, because LeBron had an off game, and I don't think that LeBron's game was because the Rockets did anything miraculous. That was just LeBron having an off game. It's regular season LeBron, and I hate to be cliche, but postseason LeBron is a completely different beast than regular season LeBron. And, you know, in that game, Anthony Davis did still get his. LeBron did not get his. Like, if memory serves, because I don't have the box score pulled up directly, you know, LeBron had, like, what, 17 points or something? You know, had a terrible shooting night. So, I don't expect that from a playoff version of LeBron. But what I do expect is, again, the point of attack for the Lakers, everything funneling through LeBron and AD, kind of, in a way, is predictable, and it forces the Lakers to rely on, you know, their role players. And that's how LeBron led teams have been for years, you know, for the past decade. It's LeBron's going to get his, usually his co-pilot's going to get his. It's who's going to step up and be that third person, who's going to step up out of the role players and be that contributing factor, that X factor to, you know, potentially win a game or help win a series. And I think that the Rockets have more X factors on their roster than the Lakers do. Because, again, the Lakers are really top heavy with their top two. You know, you can make the argument that they have two of the top five best players in the league on that roster. But then after that, you know, you go, okay, who's their third? You know, who's their third best player? The Rockets have a clear-cut third when he's playing well, when he's playing his normal version of basketball, in Eric Gordon. And then past that, they have a bunch of guys who really do have that ability to step up on any given night. and, you know, be that third best player, or, you know, be that X factor that could potentially win you a game. Robert Covington, Austin Rivers, Ben McLemore, if he gets hot, those kinds of guys. Even PJ Tucker, you know, can sometimes find the stroke from behind the arc and, you know, have an explosive shooting night. I don't really see that as much out of the Lakers. I guess I just think that the supporting cast is a little bit better for the Rockets. Now, the records don't necessarily reflect that, but there's also plenty of games that you can point to this season for the Rockets that just, you know, things didn't quite break their way. You know, you think of all the back-to-backs that Russell Westbrook was resting. You think about some of the issues that they have had this season, Eric Gordon not being, you know, healthy and, you know, playing up to his best version of himself, those kinds of things. I do think the series would be interesting, you know, and I think that the Rockets could, you know, legitimately take this version of the Los Angeles Lakers with LeBron and AD to 6 or 7 games. You know, even though right now the Lakers and, you know, over in the East, the Bucks, you know, are head and shoulders above the rest of the league, and just in their own conference, the Lakers and the Clippers are head and shoulders above everybody else in the Western Conference. You know, I do think that the Rockets are that third team in the West that really, you know, has a chance to make a run at the title besides the two teams from LA. So that's what I'll leave you guys with. I do apologize that Michael wasn't able to chime in on the Lakers side of things, but we will get to our discussion regarding the rumors of the Rockets head coaching position coming up in just a second. So you guys don't go anywhere. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, chatting with Sports Illustrated's Michael Shapiro. So, Michael, there was a bit of interesting information that broke the other day, and now there's, you know, some follow-up from that information courtesy of Sam Amick from The Athletic. So to kind of preface this, Mark Berman of the New York Post actually reported that former Bulls and Timberwolves head coach Tom Thibodeau might be an option for the Rockets this upcoming summer should they part ways with Mike D'Antoni, which it seems to be the likely chain of events that, you know, D'Antoni's not going to be a part of this team moving forward. And so that was the original scoop, but apparently Sam Amick continues to hear the name Jeff Van Gundy, of all people, associated with the potentially vacant head coaching spot here in Houston. What do you think about that?
You know, I think it's certainly a very intriguing situation. I'll say first that I've personally enjoyed working with Mike D'Antoni, pardon me. And I think he's been a really strong coach in Houston. I think the way in which he's formed a bond and a relationship with James Harden and Russell Westbrook, especially this year, has been very impressive. So I don't want to kind of kick him out before he really has a chance to make his final playoff run here. But the candidates listed are certainly intriguing. You know, Van Gundy has coached here before, had a lot of success in New York. Thibodeau, I think, is kind of a more controversial hire if the Rockets went that route. You know, he kind of wore out his welcome both in Chicago and Minnesota. I think both of those names are ones we kind of expected if this is, in fact, D'Antoni's last year. And I want to dismiss it. I think that Van Gundy, he's been in broadcasting for so long, but it seems like he's always stayed very well connected to the NBA and to the sport, which I think is key. I wouldn't be surprised if he was the guy they tabbed, especially with a new ownership group here, after kind of the falling out that Van Gundy had with Wes Alexander. With Tillman Fertitta, it's kind of more of a blank slate, right? So that's something that Amick hinted at, and that it would be a more feasible situation this time around.
You know, and my thing too, and here's the thing is, one, I just want to make this abundantly clear. Nobody on the Rockets, from the front office to the players to the ball boys, nobody is immune to slander when they're not doing their job well. Like that, like I have criticized the organization from the top all the way down to the bottom when things aren't going right, or when things, in my opinion, and usually lots of other people's opinions, aren't being handled properly. So I've given MDA his fair share of criticism throughout this season and in previous seasons, even before I had a platform to do so. Now, that being said, I do appreciate what he's done for Houston. I do appreciate the time that he's spent here with the Rockets, and I really do think that he is one of the coaches you look at and you think, damn, he really should have a ring or two by now because he is a good coach. But I think that he may, you know, have... I think he may have served his purpose here in Houston, right? I think he may have unlocked the full potential of what James Harden could be by you know, coming in and putting the ball in his hands and saying, hey, and I remember this being so controversial when it first happened, that 16-17 year, you know, MDA's first year here in Houston, the Rockets coming off of that really abysmal 15-16 campaign, 41-41, bounced in the first round of the playoffs by the Warriors, you know, total letdown compared to what had happened the season prior. And he put the ball in James Harden's hands and said, you're my point guard. And James was like, what? I'm a shooting guard. And and then he proceeded to average the most assists in the league at like 11.2 per game or something crazy like that. He unlocked what James Harden could be. And I will forever be grateful for him to him for doing that. But I wonder what James Harden would look like in a team coached by another, by literally anybody else. It could be Tibbs. It could be JVG. It could be Kenny Atkinson. It could be some no-name coach from the G League. Doesn't matter. I don't necessarily see James Harden suddenly regressing just because Mike D'Antoni's not his coach anymore. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assumption. I do think that D'Antoni, as you said, deserves significant credit for being perhaps one of the most hands-off, if not the most hands-off coach in the league. You know, I think especially with the superstars now, some might say that gets him into trouble and he might be asleep at the wheel of certain rotations. I think that's where people get really frustrated with him. But I think that the style in which he kind of leads his guys and leads the Rockets is something that's very fitting for this roster. Now with Van Gundy, I don't have as much analysis on that. I think that Thibodeau feels like a complete 180. It seems a little bit of a volatile idea, personally. I would have some skepticism about bringing Tom Thibodeau in here.
Hang on. Something volatility, just because that word gets thrown around the Rockets quite a bit. So I just I find it funny that that was your choice of word to describe the situation. But
sure. Certainly. I mean, that's been the name of the game, I feel like, for a few years here, especially. It would definitely be an interesting situation if there was a new guy in here. I don't want to speculate too much, but if this is, in fact, D'Antoni's last year in Houston, you brought up Kenny Atkinson. I think D'Antoni would be a fantastic replacement for Kenny Atkinson in Brooklyn, going to manage Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, two kind of mercurial superstars. You've seen how D'Antoni has managed stars in Houston. Maybe he could get those guys to kind of have a rosier outlook in 2020 and 2021. Just an idea. Not that we're rushing him out the door, but if this is D'Antoni's last time in Houston, perhaps Brooklyn could be a nice little spot for him next.
No, that remains interesting, you know, and I think one of the factors too that you look at is, you know, Mike D'Antoni, who I think he just turned 69, I believe, or is about to turn 69.
In a few days, yeah.
Yeah, he's so one of the, you know, older coaches in the league, and, you know, definitely, you know, some people kind of viewed his stop here in Houston, signing that 4-year contract, as what would be, you know, his last stop as an NBA coach. Now, he's more than welcome to continue coaching, but, you know, if he did choose for this to be his last stop, you know, I would regret Mike D'Antoni never winning a ring, especially with how close he came in 17-18 with, you know, not, I can't say roughly the same Rockets team, because it's largely different now. The only remaining members, if memory serves, are James Harden and Eric Gordon from that team. Now, you can probably throw Gerald Green in the mix, because everybody knows Gerald Green will be back as soon as the official free agency date rolls around, whatever time that may be. I don't think there's any bad blood there. You know, he was rehabbing the leg. They did the trade to, you know, just, you know, as salary filler, whatever you want to call it. I'm sure Gerald Green will be back in Houston Rockets jersey as soon as he is eligible to do so. Now, that being said, it is just James Harden and Eric Gordon from that team. Then you've also got the Phoenix Suns teams that, you know, were very close, you know, insanely talented teams that really just couldn't, you know, knock the door down and get to the finals and, be champions, really. And that feels really bad for Mike D'Antoni, a guy who has been, you know, innovative and at the forefront of, you know, this three-point revolution in the NBA, the offenses that we now see that, you know, kind of replicated his systems from years ago. And I say all that just because, again, I don't want anybody to think that I hate Mike D'Antoni. I don't. I think he's great. I think he does have his issues as a coach. And, you know, I look at it from a number standpoint, and the Rockets have been, you know, top two in the NBA in offensive rating every year that MDA has been here. Now, they've also only had one year where they were a top 10 defense, and that's the 17-18 year. And you can make the argument that that was because of Chris Paul, that it was because of the other personnel that were also on hand, because you had Trevor Ariza, you had Luke Bamute, you still had PJ Tucker as well, and then also Jeff Bezelic as the assistant coach, basically in charge of the defense. So there were a lot of pieces in play around Mike D'Antoni so that he could focus on what he excelled at, which was the offensive side of things. And then there were other pieces in place to shore up the defense that just weren't there in the previous year, the 16-17 campaign, as well as the following 2 years. And so to me, just the idea of a defensive minded coach coming in. Now Thibodeau is very, you know, that one's kind of out there. I don't want anybody to think I'm pining for Tom Thibodeau, but Jeff Van Gundy remains interesting because it does seem like he's been, you know, at least when he's, you know, talking about the game during, you know, as a broadcaster, it seems like he kind of understands the revolution that the NBA has undergone as far as the offense is concerned. So thinking about a coach who could come in and really instill the defensive principles that we saw during that 17-18 campaign, as well as just kind of allow the superstar duo of James Harden and Russell Westbrook to continue to dominate offensively the way that they do, it's intriguing. That's, you know.
Yeah, I certainly think it's an intriguing idea. And Van Gundy by no means is kind of an old man yelling at the clouds like some, you know, old broadcasters are. I think Van Gundy very much has his pulse on the league. You know, his work with USA Basketball, I think, has really helped fuel that for sure. One thing I just want to say about D'Antoni is the word you use, innovator, and that's exactly correct. And there's pretty good chance that he'll end his career, you know, without that elusive ring. But I don't think that should muddy his place kind of in basketball history. You know, back with Phoenix and both with Houston here, he has really changed the way the game has been played in back-to-back decades. And I think it's something he should really be commended for. If this is his last year in Houston, it's certainly unfortunate that they never did capture a ring. But he has been a major reason why they've had such success over the past 4 years.
All right, Michael. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to be here with us and to discuss, you know, potential playoff scenarios whenever basketball does get back here, and to kind of, you know, hit on that little bit of it's not really breaking news, but, you know, that little rumor, the speculation going on there. So as per usual, you know, before we get you out of here, let us know where we can find all your content.
Yep, of course. You can follow me on Twitter at mshap2, and you can find all of our SI Rockets writing on si.com/NBA/Rockets.
All right. Thanks again, man. We appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you so much.
All right. As always, thank you all so much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Michael, and I look forward to having you all back here again very, very soon at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.